Welcome to Comics,
episode 237. This week, we talk about Batgirl, year one. Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast begins.
So yeah, I haven't posted the pictures of the, this is Wednesday the 21st when we're recording, and I haven't posted the pictures yet, because today I had a stupid, crazy, today we had our student appreciation festival at work, but like, I was outside working all day, so I didn't get a chance to put up the pictures. Mm. But I have all the pictures from everybody now, except for myself, which I'm going to take tomorrow morning.
I worked really hard to get my pictures taken.
I know, you fucking made a light box and shit.
Yeah, I did.
That's fucking dedication.
I didn't have a good background, so I was like, I'll just make one. And I had a cardboard box. It's like the worst light box ever.
By the time this episode goes up, they should already be online. Because this won't go up until next week. Yeah,
you mandated that we have them, the pictures for you today.
Today. Because if I hadn't set an actual deadline, I wouldn't have gotten actual pictures of Gunpla.
But you don't have to follow your own deadline, is that what you're saying?
Look, I was procrastinating, planning on you guys procrastinating. I rely on the ineptitude of my people. That's how I'm going to play that.
Mm.
Yeah. But the Gunpla looks sick. Your guys look
sick. Like, I mean,
theirs look sick. Mine's going
to
be terrible.
I really wanted to like share pictures of mine on my own Facebook page. But then I realized that would give it away.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. Tomorrow they will be up.
Please.
Pinky promise. Even if mine are stupid and shitty pictures, they will go up.
To make a light box, it's easy.
I'm going to take a picture. I'm going to take the pictures of them in my light box.
Hmm?
Like, I have a room that's basically a light box, so I'm going to do that.
Okay. The little patio thing?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's diffuse light.
Hmm.
I'll put in short depth of field, blur the background, hopefully that'll help. People won't know who's who's. That's the plan anyway? We'll see.
Yep.
Yep. That's all I got for witty banter, though. I've been trying to stretch that
out.
So,
you know how, like, on Steam, you get a thing that says, one of your things is for sale.
Yes.
So I came across that, and I forget what game was actually on sale. I didn't end up buying it, but I found out that, have you guys ever played the game Metro 2033?
No.
Mm-mm.
So, it was on sale, Metro 2033 Redux package, so you could get the Redux and then which is like a remake of the game. Not a remake, like an update, like the graphics are better and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the sequel it was like $7.50 or something. It was really cheap last weekend on Steam. And so I bought it, and it's a pretty cool game. It's classified as like a survival / horror game, but it's more survival than horror. I haven't really played a survival / horror game since like Resident Evil 2 or 3.
Yeah.
But this one's really cool. It's based on a book by a Russian author, and the book is about, and the game by extension, it's like a post-nuclear war world in Moscow. But the reason why it's called Metro is because a bunch of people survived by fleeing into the metros, the underground like subway system in Moscow. And there's little communities at stations, and you're this character who has to, you're basically, it's like a quest, and you're in this, like, you know, you live in the metro, and you go up on the surface a little bit, but the game really takes place in the tunnels and everything. And then, you know, there's monsters and other humans, and the different little communities kind of had their own ideologies. So there's literally there's a community of communists and a community of Nazis, and they are at war with each other. But it's really interesting. So you have like guns and stuff, but some of the guns are like homemade, like kind of shitty guns.
Yeah.
And you can upgrade them as you go.
Okay.
And by like finding parts and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But then what is interesting, I think, and this kind of goes to the survival part of it, is that you know how in like a lot of shooters and stuff, there's just like ammo boxes on the ground and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
This one, you really only find ammo and like health kits and stuff on corpses. Like people who were kind of doing the same thing that you did but didn't make it. you have to like pick through corpses to find more
useful
ammo
shit.
Yeah. Oh, and then like there's irradiated places where you have to use a gas mask, and you have to replace the filter on your gas mask. And the filter has a time limit. So if you run out of filter, you start to get sick and eventually die.
And this sounds like it'd be fun. Cool.
And what's
like
it called?
It's called Metro 2033. You should get the Redux version, which is the same game, but it's updated. And like another cool thing, like a little touch in the game, is if like you're on the surface, it's really cold and like snowing and stuff, because it's like a nuclear wasteland plus Russia. Your gas mask will start to like frost over, and you have to wipe your gas. You have to wipe the screen off, otherwise it becomes hard to see.
Oh, cool.
And if you're wearing your gas mask in a fight, it will get slowly damaged. Like, the screen will get cracks and stuff on it. And then it makes it difficult to see, and you have to find a new gas mask on a corpse. But it's really cool. It's very cool. I'm enjoying it a lot so far.
It sounds like it has good attention to detail.
Yeah. I'm probably like 3 hours or so into the game. About 4 hours into the game so far. But I'm really liking it a lot, and it's pretty cool. Nice. I just wanted to share, you know, I've been sharing that with people because, you know, I remember hearing about the game when it came out, but a lot of my friends that I know who are gamers, I've asked them if they played the game, and a lot of people, it seems like, at least in my circle of friends, haven't played this game, so I'm really liking it so far.
Yeah, it's legit.
And it's based on a novel. The novel has two sequels, and apparently what it was like really popular when it came out, and in the I think the book came out in 2005, and other authors have added to the universe, and the original author totally supports these people.
Oh, sick. That's awesome.
And so it's not just fan fiction. It's like other published works that take place in the same universe.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's pretty interesting. It's really neat. And you know, if you don't like jump scares and stuff in video games, that really doesn't exist in this game. Sometimes you'll be surprised because a monster will like, you won't hear it sneaking up on you, but it's not like
it's not trying to startle you.
No, no.
Yeah.
There's like spooky supernatural stuff, and I think that's kind of where it gets the horror
label,
but yeah, but it's definitely more survival than horror, and it's kind of a shooter. It's like a FPS game. I mean, it's a first person shooter, definitely, but it's got some kind of RPG elements in where you're not like leveling up or anything, but there's decision making and stuff in the game.
Sick.
So it's pretty cool. I don't know if it's still on sale, but
it won't be by the time this goes up. I almost guarantee it.
So
sorry, listeners. But next time it goes on sale, add it to your wish list, and Steam will send you that terrible, terrible email.
Yeah, right now the bundle is it's not on sale anymore as of this recording.
So well, apparently, City Skylines is in a bundle too, right now, which is really good.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to. Good. That's a game that's on my wish list.
I think it's on Humble Bundle.
If Metro sounds interesting, keep an eye out for it. to go back on sale. It's pretty cool. I really enjoy it so far.
Sick.
It's also on, I think the Redux version is on like Xbox and PlayStation 4, if that's your...
That's your jam.
If that's your gaming platform, so.
Cool. So you guys ready to talk about this week's comic?
Oh, yes. Right before we go, I just want to say one more thing about Metro.
Yes.
I found this sweet gun on somebody's corpse. It's a shotgun with 4 barrels, and it's pretty great. It kills some of the monsters in one. If I just unload blast. All 4 barrels at once, it takes care of them.
It's pretty great. Awesome. All right, let's talk about this week's comic.
All right.
This week's comic.
This week we read Batgirl Year One, written by Scott Beatty with Chuck Dixon. And art was from Marcos Martin, who I said just like a month ago, I wish I could read more Marcos Martin. And ta-da! More Marcos Martin.
Your wish came true.
I know. What was it else that we read? Ah, fuck. This is going to... whatever. I'll look it up later. But yeah, Marcos Martin, awesome art in this. Awesome writing too, Scott Beatty and Chuck Dixon. And yeah, I don't know if you guys can tell, but I kind of like this comic a lot. It seems unfair. Like, Barbara is already everybody's favorite Batgirl, and this just, like, she didn't need the extra help, but she got it anyway, because she's awesome.
Yeah, this was a pretty great comic.
I don't think that
cool, episode over. Woohoo!
I don't think any of us went into this expecting to dislike it or be in any way disappointed. Is that the impression that you guys got as well?
Yeah. I mean, this is on a bunch of lists of, like, one of the best comics of all time. It's usually down near the bottom because people like to seem all heady or erudite with some stuff or, like, pick the popular things. But this is usually, like item number 9 or 10 on the list of 10 best comics of all time. This makes it onto a lot of those lists.
Batgirl. 10 best Batgirl comics of all time or comics?
A lot of just best comics of all time. I see this come up every once in a while. And I don't know. I'm not going to get into that debate because we've read a lot of really good stuff for this show. And I think a lot of people forget other good comics when they make those lists. But I got to say, there's so much to appreciate in this one. Like, I found myself constantly surprised by how much I liked the second-hand character development of Jim Gordon. Because we always only see Jim Gordon from Batman's point of view. And it's so interesting and neat to see him, like, in the home as just, like, a normal person in this kind of way.
Yeah, I think that we tend to see him as, like, I don't know, we see him as Barbara Gordon's dad a lot, yes, but the, like, I don't know, protective father is the aspect we don't see as much. I mean, of course he always is looking out for her, and he cares about her, but, like, he goes through her room trying to figure out if she's Batgirl. Like, that's an aspect of him that we don't normally see, where he goes, like, overboard in being protective.
Yeah, but I also like about that neither one of them brought it up again later. Like, they both, like, on the one hand, Jim did violate her privacy and he should not have done that. But on the other hand, I'm sure he knows that Barbara feels guilty about something because Barbara doesn't bring it back up. Like, I appreciate that he picks up on those bits of innuendo, and that's what makes him such a good detective. I mean, you get the moment where he's like, red hair, and, like, that's the thing that triggers him. But you knew before then that he had suspicions. You could tell. You could tell, because Barbara knew that he had suspicions. And, like, it's really cool to see him put those pieces together slowly.
Well, I'm glad that this comic, like, acknowledged that, because, you know, in comics, people always talk about, like, Superman with just, you know, he just puts on glasses and becomes Clark Kent, you know, and it's like, how can people never know? And what's kind of, I think that this comic kind of throws those people a bone in acknowledging that James Gordon as a police detective is not a complete pushover when it comes to putting things together, you know?
Yeah.
So. I think that it was kind of refreshing to see that. But I think it was done in a good way, because it kind of built up as time went by, or as the issues rolled by, you know.
Yeah, and you know, I'm pretty sure, I think it was in the Batman animated series where there was, I don't know, I seem to have this recollection that it was there, that it was kind of shown that it was understood that Jim Gordon knew who Batman was, but never said it outright, and certainly never said it to Batman, didn't ever want to break that facade for either one of them. Because as soon as he acknowledges out loud that he knows, then he has to do something about it. And as soon as he acknowledges, then it puts Batman in a different position too. But it's kind of understood that he's not an idiot. He has it figured out. He knows who Batman is. But for the sake of this house of cards that they've managed to build together, it stays internal for him. And I like that idea a lot, but then this really supports it too, that like, he's not a dummy. It took him, what's the span of this comic, and he figured it out in that amount of time who it was, when nobody else around him did, necessarily. I mean, other than Batman. But the other moments that I like with Jim Gordon is the stuff like, when he goes to use the bathroom, and he's like, is this girl stuff? Because then I can leave. I like those moments too. Those are sweet.
Yeah, I think he comes across like fairly one-dimensional sometimes, like as a family man, right? He's just like, you know, Barbara, don't go jumping off buildings and crap. But like, we never see, I guess, the more funny, like, day-to-day aspect of their relationship. But it's charming. It's just utterly charming to see the two of them together.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, to see his teeth when he talks about vigilantes. You don't get that a lot either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jim Gordon was... It's weird, because this comic didn't have a lot of characters, but I feel like they all had, like, a good amount of development, so I don't know where to bounce to next. What about, I don't know. Help me.
Why don't we talk about Killer Moth?
Killer Moth!
I kind of hate Killer Moth. Not in this comic. In general, he is my least favorite Batman rogue. But for no reason directly from the comics, and let me tell you why I hate Killer Moth. It's because of HeroClix fans. So I used to, you know, I used to play HeroClix a lot, don't play so much anymore. And when I was playing a lot, especially during, a few years ago, a Batman set came out, and there was a Batman organized play event, and I was playing a lot. And people were, people online, as they are wont to do, were complaining that WizKids was not making a Killer Moth figure. And I just got so tired of hearing about Killer Moth. I was like, this guy is not that interesting. You know, he's like, well, because there's a version of Killer Moth where he's like a giant moth monster, kind of like Man-Bat.
Yeah, okay.
Obviously, he's not in this. But I was like, nobody cares about Killer Moth. He's a stupid character. He's not that prevalent in the Batman universe. That's why nobody wants to make a HeroClix figure out of him. And so every once in a while, WizKids will do a thing where people can vote on like a fan.
Oh, a fan choice.
And Killer Moth was on the list. And guess what? He didn't win.
Because he's not that interesting.
And people, the Killer Moth, we'll call them shippers for lack of a better word. they cried conspiracy.
Well, I mean, was there a Firefly figure?
There is a Firefly figure in the Batman Arkham Origins set.
Okay.
But that's because Firefly is in,
Arkham Origins.
He's in an Arkham Origins, yeah. Or one of the Batman Arkham games. I don't know if there's another one, but nobody cares that much about Firefly to complain. But apparently there are people who fucking love Killer Moth.
And, you know what it is?
So going into this comic... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Andy.
You know what? It's because Killer Moth is a stupid fucking loser. And I hate to say it, but there are a lot of stupid fucking losers out there. And those stupid fucking losers... Like... I hate to stereotype, but losers like to root for losers, and maybe all of those people posting demanding Killer Moth were losers, and they wanted their loser figure. That sounds super bullying. I sound like such a jackass describing it that way.
You know, maybe. That could be the case. Who knows? But, so going into this comic, when I realized that Killer Moth was going to be in it, I mean, I knew that pretty much from the get-go because I saw the cover of issue 2, which has Barbara holding Killer Moth's mask.
Yeah.
And I thought, I groaned and rolled my eyes to myself, and I was like, oh my god, great. But I was pleasantly surprised by this comic. It changed my opinion of Killer Moth.
Hey!
He was cool. I mean, I don't know if maybe cool is the wrong word, but he was definitely entertaining.
Yeah, he was an interesting counterpoint.
Yeah.
Well, and I think Killer Moth was a great choice for this comic and for this story in particular. Because Killer Moth and Firefly, they're the two sides of the Batman coin, right, in terms of villains. So, I love the way this worked. Right. You get Barbara Gordon and she's becoming Batgirl. And I think in her head, especially in that first issue, her idea of what being a bat person is fighting ridiculous idiots like Killer Moth, right? That's what she sees them doing. And that's what's in her mind. And that's why she thinks so easily, I could do that. It's just some fucking idiot like Killer Moth, derp, you know? And she's right. But then slowly she realizes that she's wrong. Right? I mean, it's not just that moment when she's in the training room of the Batcave at the very end when they're like, okay, but this is going to become your future. This is going to become your reality. And then the heavy hitter villains come out on that practice area. And in practicality in real life, Killer Moth, funny or whatever, but suddenly Killer Moth meets this guy and turns him into Firefly. And Firefly is not funny, ha ha ha. Firefly is serious shit. And Firefly will fucking burn you alive, Barbara. And he is not... Sure, he's dressed up in the same funny insect-y getup, ha 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 ha, but no, he's straight up batshit insane and he will burn you alive.
Yeah, he's like a for-real psychopath.
Yeah,
right.
He's scary. And
so I think it's really interesting to see that dichotomy of what people see and what people think it is to fight these crazy, ridiculous villains and what the reality can be. They're the two sides of the same coin. And I love that they're both insects and that they teamed up. And it's like, Barbara, future and present right there. Know what you think is going on and know what will actually be going on. Know the real threat.
You know, what was actually kind of interesting, too, is the whole issue of her not really understanding that even Killer Moth was a threat. Like, starts really early. And we see what a novice she is at crime fighting. Because, do you remember the scenes where she's, like, profiling him on the office computer?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, he likes to hang out with classy people because he's rich and he's, like, in some random villain dive bar.
Yeah.
And then, you know, his goons must love him and they all just, like, dump him.
Yeah.
So, from the very start, she makes it really clear that she has a long way to go in playing detective, or even, you know, being a real detective, as the case may be. And I don't know, like, I genuinely don't know where I was going with that point. My train of thought entirely derailed. So there we go.
Yeah, the idea is that even considering Killer Moth to be a joke, she underestimated the joke. And the fact that, like, she needs to, if she's going to become a bat person, she can't disregard one of these people, no matter how easy they seem to disregard. No matter how much of a joke Killer Moth might seem, Killer Moth was the person who helped Firefly become who he was. If Killer Moth hadn't been, then it'd be like, hey, you seem like a psychopath. You seem like you could help me out. Let me get you some swag. And then, like, Killer Moth is the one who elevated that Linz guy to become Firefly. And even though Killer Moth himself is a joke, he created the problem. And even if that's the only part of him you underestimated, in a way, all of that shit at the police station, that shit burning, is on you for underestimating Killer Moth and letting him slip away, even though he's a joke. Even though. And, like, you get the feeling Batman... Even Dick Grayson, they would not have, like, you can't consider them jokes. You can't. And she was doing it from page one. She was like, ah, whatever, some fucking idiot in an insect mask. Who the fuck does that? I'm like, yeah, but that guy is going to cause you a shitload of problems down the line. Is that what you're going for?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, so I don't know. I really like these choices of villains because, I mean, it's not Joker. It's not Clayface. It's not anything insane. It's nothing crazy.
Well, what's cool about... another good thing about using these characters is they're pretty small characters in the Batman rogues gallery, so they don't have the same baggage attached to them as characters like, like Joker or Clayface, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So... And both of them were new to the villain game, which paralleled Barbara's growth really well. So, I think they were really good choices.
About baggage, definitely Clayface. What do we read something that had like Clayface 4 in it? I think it's what he actually was. Catwoman, that's what it was. That one, yeah, that had like I think that was Clayface 4, the Clayface that they showed in that Catwoman comic. Yeah. Anyway. Those are good choices. I really liked Dick Grayson in this too. You see, he's still got the youthful excitement about being a crime fighter.
He's not jaded Nightwing now?
No, he's not jaded Nightwing. He never grew a ponytail. You know, he never did any of that stuff.
Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, look at Superman. He had a mullet.
Hey, nothing wrong with that mullet. Party in the back, business up front.
His was pretty party in the front, was, too.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just all party.
All party. No, I liked Dick Grayson in this quite a bit. Because he put it on slow, got in there. I don't know. It's interesting because I've only ever read the Dick Grayson, Barbara Gordon romance from an after the fact point of view in like Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see the beginning of it in this comic. And know how naturally it came to both of them.
I like how Barbara was like, ew. At first with Dick. But that's pretty funny.
And just like making fun of him left and right too.
Yeah.
Pixie I don't bits. Even know if it was like an ew so much as like she seemed like she wanted to be, like, all business.
Yeah. Well, I think she says ew, actually, at one point.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, she does.
Oh, that's mean. That's cold.
Well, she wants to prove herself. She wants to prove herself, and falling for him somehow takes away from her being tough in front of them.
Which like, I
she
get,
wants, she
which
wants
is...
to be tough for them.
Which is a great reason to push him away, but, well, I guess I'd say you too, because he has those short shorts.
Yeah. What does she call him?
Pixie boots.
Yeah, pixie boots, that too, yeah.
Pixie boots, yeah.
Which is also very, very fitting. And I like how she makes fun of wearing those short shorts, you know, like, come on, he's got to be cold. Nice legs, though. I like how she, like, them. Nice legs. I mean, if you're gonna have legs like that, you might as well, you know. If you're going to have acrobat legs.
Show off the goods.
So what did you guys think of Barbara in this?
She was great. I thought she was a really well-developed main character for this one. And normally, first-person narrative text boxes have great potential to annoy me. I thought these were really well done. Her monologue was used to good effect to show how she misunderstands a situation or mm-hmm. show how new she is at this whole game. But moreover, she's just likable. Like she seems like a pretty nice person who wants to do good and is like super frustrated. But I mean, she's a compelling character.
And definitely just like Dick is in this, she's very enthusiastic. Because, like you, Andy, most of my experience with Barbara is as Oracle,
mm-hmm.
and she has a chip on her shoulder, and rightly so, you know. So this was a having like this fresh faced youth, and youthful enthusiasm was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Talk about Oracle though. I loved all the foreshadowing in this all the time.
Did you guys catch, the scene where they, have her fight like her future, and the one of the Joker is how the Joker was drawn in The Killing Joke by Alan Moore. Because that's the one where she actually gets shot and paralyzed later in, and that was some crazy foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Or I guess more of an homage, even.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was great. And then I like that it starts and ends with her talking about Cassandra the Oracle, you know, and like, there's a couple times where she talks about like a central information for superheroes, and she talks about like she drops little allusions to what could be her possible future, but she doesn't know it yet. Mm-hmm. And all those little moments, like if you're a reader of comics, they're such great little gems that are just kind of dropped in there for you to pick up and examine and enjoy, and they're all just like. Beginning to end, I don't know. I love that she unknowingly used the whole thing about Cassandra the Oracle. That was perfect.
What kept tripping me up though about the fact that the Oracle was named Cassandra.
Yeah, you're thinking Cass Kane.
Well, it kept making me think of Cassandra Kane.
Yeah.
Who is Batgirl after No Man's
After Barbara,
Land.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is she the one directly after Barbara? I don't remember. She becomes the Batgirl during No Man's Land.
Yeah.
And she's coached by Oracle. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah, that was great. So what did you guys think of? This is the thing that kind of got me as I was reading this. When she first gets taken to the Batcave, and Batman's question is, what's the reason? And she gets super defensive. She's like, are you fucking shitting me? Like, I need to prove myself to you? That's bullshit. Which, right, who decided that you got the badge here, Bruce? Who decided that you were the one in charge? He did it himself. Like, she has a valid point there. But that's what makes that scene great irony, is you know he has the reason. And that's why he lets Richard do it. That's why he lets Dick do it. Because he has the same reason. And that's why he brought him in, and that's why he lets him do it. But, I don't know, I get Barbara's reason. I understand. I really, really do. But is it enough? Is it a good enough reason?
Well, what is a good enough reason? I mean, I don't even know if you need a reason. But see, that's the thing. Do you really need a reason? Maybe it's the promise you make, that's more important. Like how Batman has her swear an oath to, you know, basically uphold the Bat family ideals. Maybe that's the more important part than why you're getting into it.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I don't know if you need a reason when you're an adult, but I think, how old is Barbara supposed to be in this? I think she's supposed to still be in high school.
What?
Or really? No, she's in college. No, no, no.
She went to at least grad school, I thought.
What was that?
Didn't she go to grad school?
No, yeah, you're right. She's a librarian, so she can't be that young. Okay.
Yeah, I got the impression that, like, Dick Grayson was significantly younger than her.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. The age was a little bit murky then. Cause maybe that's part of the good characterization in this comic, is everybody calling her little and telling her she needs to grow more. And that could be an underestimation of her age based on her height. I guess that could work. I guess that might be why I'm misestimating her age. Yeah, but you're right. She's like the head librarian at the library she works. She has to have at least gone to college and finished probably grad school to become head librarian.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like I understand her reason, but I don't know. See, because she's right. You don't. Nobody hands out a badge for this. There's no test for this. There's not even the crap Batman puts her through. Is it shouldn't have to be there. It shouldn't. And I think that's where Huntress comes in. And Huntress is in a position enough to say "fuck you." I don't care about your stupid bat symbol. But I clearly see how Barbara's reason is not as, I don't want to say not as good of a reason, cause right, like dead parents, even Barbara acknowledges, like, that is, like, holy shit, it all makes sense. Like, yes, of course, duh. Like, she sees it as, like, this eye-opening, yes, of course thing. And I think if Barbara tells you her reason, it's not a yes, of course, duh thing. It's a, well, you know, you could've tried for, like, CIA or FBI. No, the FBI is what she did. Like, you could try, like, different agencies. Go around, make the rounds. I don't know. I'm laboring the point.
But, you know, too, like, I don't really know how long this is supposed to take place over. I assume a year, because it's year one.
Yeah.
And the first time they bring her in, she fumbles. But the second time, she has an answer prepared. And I think, I mean, part of what we see is her clarifying and defining that reason for herself. Mm-hmm. Because the first couple times she goes out, it's clear that it's like a rush. She gets such a kick out of it. And it's exciting, but you think that putting your life in danger, that would soon wear off. But then she decides to keep doing it. And yeah. I think what she had to answer wasn't, why would I go out in the first place? It was, why would I continually do this and turn it into my life? And I mean, it's the development of that that I think is really interesting to watch.
All right. Thank you for helping me out with that point. I knew there was something else that I wanted to say, and I couldn't pull it out. So thank you for helping me pull it out. So what was your guys' favorite scene? Art-wise counts, too. I'll tell you, there was one panel that was a stupid fucking panel. I think it was like an issue 2 or 3, and Barbara is sneaking up to the roof, and Jim Gordon has turned on the bat signal, and it's a panel with like her looking out from that stairwell. And I just love that the bat signal is in the middle and it's shining up and to the left, and the entire left hand side of the panel is in the light of the signal, and Jim is standing there, and to the right of the bat signal is the darkness of night, and Batman is standing there. And it's this really great, just well-drawn, well-laid-out, and awesomely colored little panel that you could just gloss over so quickly and so easily, but it was a great visualization of where they both see themselves in that moment. And it just, I don't know, I should go back and find out exactly what issue it was, but it was a great little panel. And it stuck out to me as I was reading. I was like, oh, that's wonderful.
So I found the panel you're talking about. It was in issue 1, actually.
Oh, issue 1. Okay, great.
Yeah. Thank you. What's my favorite scene? I don't know. There's a lot of fun ones in this comic. I think this comic wasn't necessarily like a super lighthearted comic, but what was cool about it was that there's a good balance of moments between fun and serious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really liked the scene where it's in issue 1 where Barbara's at her martial arts class.
Yeah.
And the sensei, who's kind of he's definitely an asshole.
He's a huge asshole.
Is like berating her in front of the whole class, and she kicks his ass. That was very satisfying to read. I liked the cameos, especially the Wildcat and Dr. Fate.
That little moment.
Little moment, yeah. I was very excited to see that Roy Raymond Jr. appeared in this comic. Some people may know him better as Owlman from The Outsiders. I don't know why. I really like Roy Raymond. I couldn't really tell you why. He's just a character that I really like in comics.
Don't need a reason.
Yeah, but in this, he appears as a newspaper reporter, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, that's what he was.
I think he's one of the reporters for the masquerade. Oh, he's talking to Bruce Wayne in his clown costume.
Yes.
Oh, that costume was amazing.
It's perfect. Covers up all of the suit that he has on underneath it.
Like,
I thought it was funny when he was in his car trying to change into the bat suit.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's great about it is, like, clearly a costume left over from, like, 1940s Batman. Except it's at least the 80s because Barbara Gordon owns a computer.
Yeah.
So dated.
What's cool, too, is she's, like, unabashedly a nerd.
Yeah.
Like, one of the first things she notices when she's in the Batcave is what kind of computer Batman has.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She, like, wakes up and turns and looks at it and just starts drooling.
She's like, wait a minute, is that whatever nice, it's called?
Nice mainframe.
Yeah.
I think she says something like that. Oh, and I just remembered another scene I really liked because it was disturbing in all the right ways, was when Linz, the pyrotechnic guy, is in the meeting and asks, but were the cameras on? Can I have the film?
Yeah.
That was man. Creepy. That like that sent a little chill up my spine. I was like, oh, no. And the director dude had the right attitude. Are you fucking kidding me? Get out of here. Like, but that little interaction was like, it was spot on for what you needed it to be. What about you, Jen? What was your favorite?
It's the scene where she tethers the helicopter, and it's kind of like that whole overarching scene where Batman and Robin are in their own helicopter, and Batman knows what she's doing, but Robin's like, oh shit, oh god, what's happening? As like he figures out what she's doing, and then she actually manages to like figure out that she can jump into the pool.
Yeah.
Below her. I thought that was really good. But I gotta say, like, this isn't even a scene, but I love, love, love the cover for issue 5.
Oh, yeah. All the covers.
But it's the one where she's, like, leaping and there's flames and it's just the black silhouette with, like, the yellow background.
That one is pretty cool.
It's so good.
I feel like all these covers would be great. Like, just to buy these singles and put them up, like, in a row on the wall. If you're a big Batgirl fan, oh man, these are all just magnificently gorgeous.
Yeah, I really like issue number 9 too, because her cape looks like Batman's symbol a little bit. It's kind of the same shape, but she's standing in front of it, like, you know, she's risen to Batman standards or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all fantastic. And if we're talking about the art a little bit too, I also want to give a ton of credit to the colorist, Javier Rodriguez. Because aside from this being great pencil work through and through, I really like that every time we see Gotham, it's shades of black. Right? Especially like if you think about the old cartoon, when it like they famously decided to draw the cartoon on black paper instead of white paper. And there's the way it put everything in that noir, dark, shadowy mood, and everything with Gotham, with Batman, is dark and shadows. But in this, when Barbara is Batgirl, yes, it's still dark, but the shadows have, like, these pink and yellow and purple textures that's different, and it's still definitely Gotham. It's still shadowy, but it's brighter somehow. There's more interest and fun in the way the city feels through Barbara's eyes. And that like the flare of color that runs through this does such a great job of making Gotham feel different from a new point of view, but still feel the Gotham just through the coloring all the way through this. Mic drop, motherfucker. All right, let's rate this. Yeah?
Okay.
All right. Jen, you go first.
5. Like, I really enjoyed reading this. This will be one that will stay in my collection forever. It's just, the art's great for the feel, like you said. It feels right for Barbara Gordon. If it had been any darker and grittier, it would have been a Batman comic. But this is Batgirl, and she's different. I like the story. I thought they did an excellent job with her character development. And even the development of, like, fucking Killer Moth. You go from him being, like, a whiny alcoholic loser to seeing some guy get, like, you know, burnt up, and he turns around and is about to puke. And it's just, like, those little details, even for characters who probably otherwise wouldn't be focused on,
mm-hmm.
it just makes this comic really enjoyable. I loved everything about it, so 5.
Sick. David?
Yeah, I'm also going to give it a 5. This was really good. This is the second of the year one comics that I read. The first one was Batman Year One, which is not the Scott... Oh, no, that was Year Zero. Batman Year One was really cool. And that's actually a story about... Even though it's called Batman, it's really a story about Jim Gordon. Sorry, I went off a little tangent, but it's a really good comic, too. But yeah, this was... I can see why this has made it onto so many best of lists. It's just a really, it's a good story. Like Jen said, I think it captures Barbara Gordon really well. And it was, I really liked it because, like I said earlier, I hadn't had much experience reading Barbara outside of being Oracle. And so this was, it was a good chance to see her as Batgirl, and it was done in a really good, refreshing way. So, 5. Yeah, I'm just rambling now.
That's fine. Let's ramble on. I'm also going to give it a 5. the story was really good, but, like, oh, just a good artist who does good face work, and then couple that with a good colorist. Like, that just slays me. Good color work is amazing, and I'm going through the covers as well. And you guys have your favorite covers. I think my favorite is issue 2, when she's holding, like, a crumbled up or, like, shattered Killer Moth mask. But she has this, like, slight grin on her face. And, like, fucking kick your ass. There's, like, this little grin she's got that's, like, adorable and awesome and perfect for that issue and her character. And I don't know. Just the art in this. Margot Martin, I think I love. I think, like, we've talked about him before, and I wanted to read more, and I've read more, and yeah, still amazeballs. So I think I have another new favorite artist that I should have known about all along, I feel.
You should have.
Yeah, but this coloring is fantastic all the way through. Yeah. So 5s all the way across. I feel like this was a hard one to talk about because it's just nothing but awesome things. Alright, you ready for Fight Night? This week's Fight Night, like every week when we do a little segment after the main show, is brought to you by Patreon. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. Become a patron today. And when you become a patron, you get access to cool perks like asking us what to read next or telling us, hey, I want to do this Fight Night next time you do a Fight Night. Or I want you to ask to do these questions. And also, if you, I think it's the $5 tier, if you become a $5 a month patron, I will send you a comic book signed by all of us. And hopefully it'll be something awesome that you enjoy. And if not, hopefully it'll be something corny and terrible that nobody likes, which we'll find entertaining to send to you. So become a patron today. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. All right. This week's Fight Night topic. What existing superhero would make the best addition to the Bat family? Since Batgirl's added to the Bat family in this comic, who would be another good addition to the Bat family?
Fight Night. Round 1.
All right, so I picked Ted Kord, who's the second Blue Beetle. And the reason I picked him is because there's... I don't know if anybody's watched the cartoon Batman the Brave and the Bold, but there's a great... it's like a 5-minute segment at the beginning of one of the episodes where Batman and Ted, like, infiltrate... I think they infiltrate Kord Industries for some reason. Well, they're doing like some corporate techno espionage, and mm-hmm. Batman and Ted, they just work beautifully together. They're both super smart. They're heroes who like to use gadgets. They're wealthy, industrialists, except Blue Beetle is not as angry as Batman. And so I feel like he could just be called like Blue Bat. Or something like that.
Bat Beetle.
I think he would work really well, as a member of the Bat family because he is very, very similar to Batman. He's a great detective also. Can't forget that. So, my vote goes for Ted. I miss you. You're my boy, Blue.
You're my boy, Blue Beetle.
Round two.
All right, I'm gonna front for Booster Gold, which I guess I have to after you do Blue Beetle. I'm gonna go with Booster Gold mostly because of when he was Supernova in 52. He already has experience fronting as a different superhero. And if you recall, in 52, when he fronted as somebody else, he did the whole strong but silent type really, really well. Nobody knew who it was. Nobody had a clue. And that's what you need to be a good Bat villain, or to be a good Bat family edition. You have to slide right in the role, not have anybody know who you are, no second guessing. Everybody, all the other Bat people are still there. There's just a new one in town. And Booster Gold's got the athleticism for it, and he would surprise everybody by actually flying. The first Bat superhero to not just use grappling hooks and shit, but still, just a human being in there. No superpowers, just using tools from the future. Booster Gold.
Round three.
Okay, since you guys did this, I'm going to have to go with Skeets.
Oh my god.
And I think Skeets would work well. He's from the future, so he already knows a bunch of stuff. He has, like, all the newspaper headlines for, what, like, 21st through 25th century, I think? So that's a pretty good database to start with. He could help out Oracle. You know, he could relay information. He's an artificial intelligence that's actually pretty smart. And I think Batman could, like, keep him in check and keep him from going evil. Also, like, if he dies, he's an AI. You could just, like, reboot him or something. So it's not like, you know, Joker's going to beat him to death with a lead pipe and everyone will cry.
Nobody cried. Fuck Jason Todd.
Poor Jason Todd.
All right. Let's get some voting in here. David, who you got?
I'm going to go... You know, Andy, I agree with many of your points, so I'm going to give my point to Andy this time.
Finally!
However, I would like to make a correction that Booster would not be the first Bat family member to fly without superpowers. That honor, I believe, maybe not the first, but a previous one is definitely Jean-Paul Valley, Azrael.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was Batman after Nightfall. He could fly around in his Bat suit.
I always forget about him.
Yeah. Because he's not that, but, you know.
Oh, and when
drops knowledge on you.
When does Terry... What century is Terry Guinness? 25th?
No, he's not that. He's like the 21st century or
because Bruce is still alive. Oh, that's way before Booster Gold's even born.
Well, but no, I was saying technicalities. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, I get you.
And then there's that Batman Inc. guy, Batwing, who's like the French Batman. No. He's the Batman of Africa.
Yes. South Africa.
No, not South Africa.
All of Africa?
I think it's a whole continent.
That is a big territory to patrol.
But I don't think he's from South Africa. I think he's from somewhere in North Africa. I'll have to look it
up. That is a hell of a territory to patrol. I'll get this city called Gotham, and you get all of Africa.
French Batman is a parkour Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hardcore Batman.
Yeah. Hardcore.
my vote's going to go for Blue Beetle.
Not
because Skeets isn't awesome and wouldn't be good at it, but, I mean, it's basically Batman, but not dark. Ted Kord is a rich billionaire playboy in charge of a technology company who is a playboy by day. Well, not a playboy. He's more of a nerdy guy. And superhero by night. But not really by night because he likes to fly around in the day. I don't know. Plus, he has all the same, like, all this. He doesn't have a Bugmobile, but he has the Bug, which is basically all of Batman's vehicles. It'd be Blue Beetle. Yeah. He would fold right in. Jen?
This is tough. I'm going to have to go with Booster Gold.
You're going to point!
I really, really enjoy the idea of that combination.
Yeah! I get a point!
Winner, Andy!
And you know, congratulations, Andy. If our listeners, if you guys want to see this, like, Beetle, Booster, Batman, Skeets world, just go read some JLI.
Yes, yeah.
Because it kind of happens there.
I need to Photoshop something. With yeah. Booster Gold and Ted Kord. in Batman uniforms. Oh, I can make them the same color. Okay, yeah. I know what I'm doing at work tomorrow. And it's not working. All right. That was this week. Next week, we're going to read Batgirl Silent Running. We're going to read some Cassandra Cain up in here.
This is the
first trade of the first volume of Batgirl when Cassandra Cain was the primary Batgirl. This is written by Kelly Puckett. I can't wait to read this. Cassandra's always been a character that I thought was really awesome and interesting. And that for some reason, Cassandra doesn't get her due in the DC world. Like, there's always panels where they talk about, like, there's one where Batman says something in the monologue, like, oh, finally, all the Bat family together again. And it's literally everyone except Cassandra Cain. Like, for some reason, Cassandra Cain is not given the respect that's due to her when DC makes the Bat family. But I want to see if that's the way it should be or not. So next week, Cassandra Cain in Batgirl Silent Running. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.
I didn't even mention today's Back to the Future Day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just because the date was in the movie, right? There's not, like, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Nothing super special.
People are, like, apparently it's supposed to be, like, this huge nerd thing, but I'm, like, I get more excited about the repetitious days that aren't going to happen again for, like, 100 years. Like the 10-10-10.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are always more interesting.
Those are cool. Because that day was